fitter, happier. A program about your health, for your health.
Now, eating disorders such as anorexia, bulimia, and binge eating disorder can lead to significant health complications and even death. Eating disorders are a serious mental issue, illness, and can affect men and women of all ages, backgrounds, and cultures. While there is no single cause of eating disorders, with professional help and support from family and peers, eating disorders can be overcome. The Centre of Clinical Interventions assists people aged 16 years and above who have an eating disorder. And today we're speaking with Dr. Stephanie Hill, Senior Clinical Psychologist at the Centre of Clinical Interventions. Welcome to the MAG.
Hi, Georgia. Thanks for having me. It's great to have this opportunity to increase people's awareness and understanding of eating disorders.
So let's start off by discussing eating disorders. So what are some of the main types?
I guess the main types or the most common types of eating disorders are anorexia nervosa, which is where people struggle with maintaining a healthy weight because of their persistent restriction and fear of gaining weight. Another common eating disorder would be bulimia nervosa. I guess that's sort of characterized by those objectively large binge eating episodes and then compensating for those in some way, such as vomiting or laxative use or excessive exercise. The third common type that we often see is binge eating disorder, and that is where you see those binge eating episodes, but those people aren't compensating behaviourally in any way, so they're not engaging in purging of any sort. Another one that's really important to mention, I think, is what we would call other specified feeding and eating disorders, which is a bit of a mouthful, but it is really important because it is diagnosed when people don't necessarily quite fit neatly into one of the other categories. And it's just so important to note that that doesn't necessarily mean that that's any less serious than I guess, a full diagnosis of one of those other mentioned diagnoses.
So who does this affect? You know, it can affect anyone at any time, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Eating disorders do not discriminate. I guess there's sometimes a little bit of a myth of the type of people that they might affect, but people of any age, all cultural backgrounds, and they can actually present at any age as well, although we do know that they're more likely to develop in adolescence and sort of early adulthood.
So how prevalent is it then in our society?
Well, most recent statistics that we have suggest that, will show that in Australia, 9% of Australians are suffering with an eating disorder. And of that, actually about 25% of those are male. So again, it does affect both genders, sexes. There is a significant portion of males who do also suffer from eating disorders.
And so we've talked a little bit about the names of eating disorders, but what effects can these have on people's health?
They can have such drastic effects on not only physical health, but psychological health, as well as even social and kind of financial health as well. It might be surprising for a lot of people to know that eating disorders actually have the highest mortality rate of any psychiatric disorder. And that's pretty scary. That is obviously an extremely serious health consequence. But aside from that, there are numerous sort of gastrointestinal, dental, bone health, hormonal issues that can come as a consequence of these eating disorders.
So, well, let's just go back to that, the highest death rate.
Yeah, yeah.
That is insane.
It's really scary to think about. And I mean, the most common cause of death in those situations would be via cardiac arrest, so heart complications, and also suicide.
I was about to say, what is there a major connection between eating disorders and people's mental health or their mental state?
Yeah, well, eating disorders are a mental health issue, so they come with their own anxieties specifically around food or eating or weight gain. And so there's always going to be some anxiety present, and depression is often co-occurring, whether that's sort of like a separate pre-existing condition or a consequence of a person being kind of stuck in an eating disorder. Not eating well affects our mood significantly, which can lead to depression and cause depression.
So is there hope for people out there?
Most definitely. There is treatment. The one thing we do know is that the quicker you get help, the sooner you get professional specialist help, the more likely it is that you'll have a good outcome from treatment. So that's one thing that we really want to try and promote, I guess, that eating disorders aren't a phase or something that people might just grow out of, but to actually seek help as soon as possible, because in terms of treatment statistics, that's the one thing we know will be the most effective.
Yeah, and as you said earlier, you know, it's great that we are talking about it and getting it out there. People shouldn't be ashamed if they're going through a rough time.
Yeah.
You can get through it. And that leads me on to the Centre for Clinical Intervention. Tell us a little bit about that.
So the Centre for Clinical Interventions, which we abbreviate to CCI, so it's not so much of a mouthful, we have a couple of different programs, so different streams. We've got obviously our eating disorder stream, we have a mood and anxiety stream, and a bipolar disorder stream. In terms of the eating disorder service that we offer, we treat people over the age of 16. Who are suffering from an eating disorder. We're an outpatient setting and we're part of the public health system, so it is free of charge, but unfortunately we do have a wait list. Basically we're staffed by clinical psychologists who are trained specialist eating disorder clinicians, and yeah, we offer, like I said, outpatient individual one-on-one psychological therapy that's all evidence-based to be the most effective in working with these disorders.
So what do you do there? How do you interact with these people?
Well, basically we offer a treatment which is called cognitive behaviour therapy. It's about looking at people's thoughts and their behaviours and really focusing on what is keeping the eating disorder going. It's not so much focused, especially in the beginning at least, at why they landed themselves in this position or what caused the illness. We are really just looking at how we can get them out of that cycle and how we can help them recover from the eating disorder.
And I'm just looking at statistics. 2/3 of your patients who are engaged and complete CBT are free of eating disorders by the end of the treatment.
Yeah, so there is no reason why this can't be effective. They're really good results. There's a lot of complicating factors, I guess, in terms of who does stay engaged in treatment. A lot of ambivalence and sometimes lack of motivation or even denial of the problem in eating disorders. It's a little bit different to other mental health issues where the person suffering from depression usually doesn't want to feel that way. But a person suffering from an eating disorder might see perceived benefits, so might be a little bit more unsure about whether they want to receive treatment. But those who do come to the realisation that they want treatment and actively work at staying engaged in the treatment program, 2/3 of those are going to achieve a significantly better result at the end of treatment.
Okay, so you say that some people may not want help. Yeah. So as family and friends, what can we look out for? If we're worried about someone, what should we be looking out for?
That's a good question, because, I mean, sometimes we do have to... Family and friends are so important in helping people first get help. Eating disorders can be very secretive. There can be a lot of shame and embarrassment associated with some of the behaviours. So sometimes it's hard to tell, but some things you can keep an eye out for are, I guess, different behaviours around mealtimes, whether people are noticeably skipping meals or noticeably not joining in on meals with other people when they might used to have, saying they've already eaten or going to eat in their room. Any significant weight change, so whether that be weight gain or weight loss, may be a bit of an indicator. And associated like change in how they're dressing, maybe wearing baggier clothes. Being more emotional around mealtimes, or being more emotional and more preoccupied and concerned with what they're eating, with their exercise regimes, with their appearance, those sort of things, might be a couple of flags to look out for. Other things might be binge eating, if you witness that, or maybe noticing large amounts of food that might be missing.
Sure, and obviously it can be a bit of a sensitive subject when bringing it up, you know, with a family member or a friend. So what can we do to support them?
The most important thing to do is to really educate yourselves, I think, to look for information and try and understand a little bit more about eating disorders. And there's some great services available and carers and support groups, such as one that we actually offer at our service, to help people who are concerned about loved ones to go through that process of kind of skilling up and getting some information. I think it's always important to let the person know that you are worried about them and that you've noted some changes, that there are some concerns, but to do so in a really calm and caring way, not to approach it in a fight or in the heat of the moment, trying to just come back at a time when you're calmer, when the person you care about might be calmer and feel a bit safer, and just really express your concern. And the first port of call is really suggesting that they go to their GP and have a chat with them, who can then point them in the direction of specialist services.
Dr. Stephanie Hill, Senior Clinical Psychologist at the Centre of Clinical Interventions, or CCI, is on Fitter Happier with us now. If we have anybody out there listening who may be struggling with some issues at the moment or maybe feeling a little bit down and wanting to speak to someone, where can they go?
There's so many great places that they can access some starting information. I think is that the best place to start. Get onto the internet, have a look at a couple of websites. There is a NEDC website, which is the National Eating Disorders Collaboration, which has so much great information just to start that process of understanding and looking for help. Obviously, our service, CCI, is another great place to start. We also have a website there with lots of information to look through. And if you're wanting to follow through with that, going to see a GP and explaining your difficulties and getting a referral to some of these services. There are quite a few dedicated services in WA, which offer treatment for eating disorders. CCI is a public service, but if you're under 16, there's obviously Princess Margaret Hospital. If you're looking in the private sector, there's Hollywood Hospital. There is a specialist service called the Swan Centre as well, which offers help. And also Women's Health and Family Services offer a body esteem program, which is great because it's run by people who have actually recovered from eating disorders themselves, and they offer support groups around that.
Yeah, that's a great initiative. And if you or someone out there that you know needs urgent support, please contact Lifeline on 13 11 14, or if you are under 16, the Kids Helpline on 1800 55 1800. Dr. Stephanie Hill, thank you for being on Fitter Happier with us today.
Thanks for having me, Georgia.
This has been an RTRFM podcast. RTRFM is an independent community radio station that relies on the public for financial support. You can subscribe online at rtrfm.com.au/subscribe.